This material, The Missing Bridge, outlines a conceptual framework designed to evaluate how social rules, institutions, and practices directly impact the physical and ecological conditions that sustain or degrade living systems. Now, the material makes a strong case for its overarching philosophy by highlighting the difference between a system's self-reported output metrics and actual on-the-ground outcomes. But to ensure this piece fulfills its intent, we need to immediately examine the audience alignment and vocabulary choices.
The stated goal of producing a public-facing synthesis is occasionally hindered by the retention of highly specialized academic terminology that risks alienating the intended lay audience. I mean, the text relies heavily on dense philosophical phrasing like life value ontoxiology and cellatogenesis and pathogenic human interference.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to take in at once.
It really is. And while it's completely accurate to the source philosophy, it clashes directly with the accessibility promised in the subtitle. It just creates unnecessary friction for a general reader trying to grasp the core concepts.
Absolutely. It can be a stumbling block.
So the suggestion here is to translate the core philosophy into everyday language much earlier in the text. You know, elevate the plain language definitions the author already possesses while minimizing or shifting the academic jargon to the background.
Right, making it actually public-facing. Do you have some concrete examples of how they might do that?
Yeah, and keeping in mind that these represent just a handful of potential solutions out of many possible paths, one option is to swap the phrase life value ontoaxiology in primary headers for something simpler, like the life value compass. You could just reserve the formal term for a footnote.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Just move it out of the main eye line.
Exactly. Another option is to forego using salutogenesis as a standalone section header. Instead, just deploy the author's own pre-existing definition, which is producing the conditions of health.
I can see what you're going for here. Let's see how we can strengthen this, because I want to offer a bit of pushback regarding that philosophical foundation.
Oh, sure. What are you thinking?
Well, the author is overtly building upon the established work of philosopher John McMurtry. If the text strips away terminology like ontoaxiology, does the framework risk losing its academic rigor? The concern is that simplifying the language might inadvertently dilute the robust causal science of living coherence the author is trying to establish.
That's fascinating. What are the potential limitations or counterarguments to that idea? Because an alternative perspective is that true rigor in a public-facing document does not manifest through philosophical labels. It manifests through the clarity of the operational mechanisms.
The mechanisms, right, like the concepts of load, capacity, and margin.
Yes, exactly. The material presents a highly structured triad, a system's load, its capacity, and its margin. That triad forces a reader to measure exactly what demand is being imposed on a living system, what resources that system possesses to respond, and what reserve remains available for the next crisis.
Yeah, I see what you mean. The rigor lies entirely within those actual relationships.
Right. Evaluating how a housing policy increases household stress and subsequently depletes a family's margin of time is a rigorous causal chain, regardless of whether it is housed under the umbrella of ontoaxiology.
And, you know, the argument here really relies on the mechanics of cognitive load. When a general reader encounters a term like pathogenic human interference, their working memory is forced to pause and decode the vocabulary.
Exactly. They hit a wall.
Yeah. And by the time they have translated the phrase into a usable concept, they have expended all the mental energy required to understand the actual systemic critique being made.
Precisely. The text itself establishes that a universal value criterion doesn't, in isolation, reveal whether a specific intervention causes asthma or restores a wetland or, you know, increases loneliness.
Right. Those are causal claims that require measurable evidence.
Exactly. So by utilizing plain language, the text allows the reader to dedicate their cognitive bandwidth to evaluating the evidence and understanding the mechanism rather than defining the terminology. The author already possesses the necessary translations.
Yeah, they've already done the hard work there.
Producing the conditions of health conveys the exact same operational meaning as salutogenesis, but invites the reader into the framework rather than establishing an academic barrier.
Well, applying that same standard to the vocabulary is a logical progression. And moving from the microscopic level of language to the macroscopic level of structural choices, Let's look closely at the section discussing the 2017 trilogy.
Ah, yes. Section 3.
Right. Section 3 serves as a bridge connecting the author's past three essays, which covered environmental conditions, credit creation, and disconnected selves, into the current framework. But I have to say, reading this section feels a bit like being forced to study the blueprints of a demolished building before being allowed to look at the new house you are trying to buy.
The structural detour into the 2017 trilogy interrupts the momentum of the central argument by focusing on the evolution of the author's thought rather than the immediate application of the new framework. Section 3 functions primarily as an internal literature review.
It really does. It forces the reader to navigate the historical context and identified flaws of older, unpublished models before they have fully grasped the mature missing bridge model.
Yeah, which stalls the pacing precisely at the moment the reader is eager to see how the theoretical compass translates into an actionable map.
So what is the best fix for that structural roadblock?
The suggestion is to restructure the document to introduce the mature framework, specifically the five questions, immediately after establishing the life value compass. That subordinates the historical evolution of the author's work to prioritize the reader's practical learning curve.
That would definitely keep things moving.
To offer concrete examples of how this restructuring might look, and these are simply a few distinct ways to address the structural flow, the entire 2017 retrospective could be condensed into a single introductory paragraph for Section 4.
Oh, so just briefly stating that early iterations focused on isolated issues, which are now unified in the new model?
Exactly. Alternatively, the 2017 trilogy comparative table could be relocated to an appendix at the end of the document that preserves the intellectual lineage for academic readers while clearing the main runway for the general public.
The pacing issue here is akin to reading a software manual that requires the user to study the beta patch notes from 3 years ago before it provides the instructions for installing the current operating system. Prior to Section 3, the text builds significant anticipation.
That's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered how keeping the trilogy central might represent the author's attempt to demonstrate their own nested feedback loop.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because a core tenet of the proposed framework is that outcomes alter future conditions.
Right. So by retaining the history of the 2017 essays, the author is arguably modeling the philosophy in real time, showing how they evaluated past frameworks, identified gaps, and built a more rigorous loop.
Exactly. It acts as a structural demonstration of the philosophy itself, showing the author's own process of evaluating load, capacity, and margin within their previous academic models.
It definitely serves that function, for sure.
It does, but evaluating the text through the lens of a public-facing document requires prioritizing the reader's momentum over the author's developmental journey. The missing bridge culminates in a highly actionable five-question sequence.
Yeah, it all leads to that sequence.
And for that sequence to have maximum impact, the reader must arrive at it with their attention and energy completely intact.
Right. Imposing a historical detour risks exhausting the reader's bandwidth before they reach the core utility of the mature framework, providing just-in-case historical background often detracts from just-in-time operational knowledge.
Exactly.
Let's examine that operational knowledge directly. Okay, so what I really like about this part is how Section 4 and Section 5 attempt to break down massive, complex systemic issues into highly measurable, localized steps. Specifically, that brilliant breakdown of load, capacity, and margin.
The theoretical robustness of the five-question bridge would be significantly enhanced by threading a single, continuous real-world example throughout the entire methodological sequence. Because right now, the five questions in Section 4 and the grammar distinctions in Section 5 remain heavily abstract.
They do. It's very conceptual at that point.
While Section 6 briefly mentions a housing policy, the lack of an end-to-end applied case study directly within the explanation of the method causes the actual execution of the framework to feel theoretical rather than usable.
That's a critical missing piece. So how do we ground it?
The suggestion is to introduce a visceral, continuous scenario early on and explicitly map every single step of the five questions and the operational distinctions onto that specific scenario, demonstrating the framework in motion.
Okay, I like that. What would that look like in practice?
As concrete examples of how to execute this mapping, and recognizing that these are merely illustrative options among many possibilities, the text could utilize the hospital output versus community health concept from the opening and track it systematically.
Oh, I see. So question one identifies the rule change, such as an early hospital discharge policy.
Exactly. Question two measures exposure, noting the increased household care burden. Question three evaluates load and margin, tracking the depletion of the family's reserve time and income.
Right.
Then question four examines regulation, highlighting the family's exhaustion. And finally, question five determines the trajectory, which is a decline in community health capacity.
That's a really great, clear breakdown.
Alternatively, the text could employ an ecological scenario, such as municipal development destroying a wetland, and run it through those exact same five steps to trace the loss of flood protection, the depletion of storm surge margins, and the resulting long-term ecological damage.
So, a key theme running through this material seems to be the profound interconnectivity across different domains, whether human, social, or ecological. The author is clearly striving to establish a universal method.
Right, they definitely are.
Is there a risk that focusing intensely on a highly specific scenario, like a hospital discharge policy, might cause the reader to pigeonhole the framework as strictly a medical or public health tool? I mean, does it undermine the universality the text aims to achieve?
Is the connection between A and B fully established in the material, or is that an area to potentially bolster? Because anchoring a theory deeply within a specific example frequently proves its universality far more effectively than leaving the domains abstract.
That's a very fair point. When a methodological concept remains abstract, its universality is often an illusion created by vagueness.
Exactly. Conversely, when a text takes a tangible scenario and subjects it to a set of universal questions, the reader observes how those questions illuminate the hidden mechanics of that specific situation. This observation is what enables the reader to transfer the methodology to their own domain.
Yeah, the cognitive leap required to go from theory to practice relies heavily on structural mapping. If an educator reads a highly detailed breakdown of how a hospital discharge policy depletes a family's margin of time and income, they do not need an explicit educational example to understand the mechanism.
No, they don't. They just map the structure of the hospital scenario onto their own environment, translating the hospital rule into a standardized testing policy, the household exposure into student anxiety, and the depleted margin into a lack of creative play.
Wow, yeah. Specificity acts as the cognitive scaffold that allows the reader to generalize the rule.
The framework presented here is exceptionally robust and can easily support the weight of a continuous grounded example. The author explicitly warns against allowing analogy to quietly replace mechanism.
Right, they do mention that.
But by withholding a step-by-step applied case study during the explanation of the five questions, the text risks succumbing to the very abstraction it seeks to cure. That dynamic is particularly evident in Section 5, where the text lists vital distinctions.
Yeah, the material instructs the reader to separate the living unity from its setting, to separate state from trajectory, and to separate event from meaning from mechanism.
Those distinctions are enigmatically sharp, but explaining a tool's function is fundamentally different from demonstrating its use on a specific subject. When the text asserts the necessity of separating intention from function and outcome, it accurately observes that institutions are often populated by individuals with positive intentions who operate within rules that structurally reward harmful behavior.
Like how a municipal housing policy may genuinely aim to increase housing supply, yet its structural function might intensify neighborhood displacement.
Exactly. Weaving a singular case study through all five questions and these distinct operational rules ensures the reader is not merely absorbing a description of the method. They are actively practicing the diagnostic sequence alongside the author.
It transforms the text from a theoretical blueprint into an active diagnostic session.
Well, establishing that this ambitious goal is practically achievable requires showing the public exactly how the evaluative tools function on the ground.
It really does.
To recap the primary areas for structural and stylistic refinement. First, slop highly specialized academic jargon for the text's pre-existing plain language definitions to ensure the material successfully aligns with its goal of being a public-facing synthesis.
Right. And second, maintain narrative momentum by relocating the historical overview of the 2017 trilogy to an appendix, which allows the mature framework to take precedence. And finally, thread a single continuous case study through the entire five-question methodology to transition the concepts from abstract theory into demonstrable real-world application. We invite the author to implement these specific structural adjustments and submit the revised material back in again for further feedback.
And finally, thread a single continuous case study through the entire five-question methodology to transition the concepts from abstract theory into demonstrable real-world application. We invite the author to implement these specific structural adjustments and submit the revised material back in again for further feedback.